case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
I was with my father, and he's been to loads of Ireland finals involving Cork over the years. It's the most sick he's ever felt. He said that he was kind of disgusted with the performance in the second half. It's everything, like, it's everything you want to say about it, you know. It was an unbelievable battle jab of epic proportions.
And there was also some of this.
You've got the trophy there. Did you sleep with it last night? Were you the one minding it?
No, I have her here, so I do have him.
Casually trying to shot there. No bother to you.
Can't say, I made him come out of the room there 5 to 8 this morning. I didn't expect to see him now, but I think he slept for him, so he did. So safe hands.
Catch up now on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
Never stop competing.
You're very welcome back. We are here to react to a fairly facile victory for the Lions on Saturday morning against Australia. 27-19 was the full-time score from test number one, and former Munster hooker Mike Sherry is back with us on the line. Mike, good to chat to you again. How are you keeping?
I'm great, Ron. How are you?
Very well. So I might start by giving the biggest glass half full analysis of what happened on Saturday. So an 8-point win for the Lions. Rewind back to 2001. It was a 16-point win for the Lions. Double the margin of victory in Brisbane again against the Wallabies. And then Australia turned it around to win the series 2-1. Wishful thinking to consider anything even closely resembling that might occur?
Yeah, well, look, if I'm to stay true to my prediction of Schmidt is the best coach in the world to come up with a plan to react to a poor performance, I think there is a bit of merit in what you're saying. But judging off the game at the weekend, it was very facile. It was flat. I think a lot of people left feeling that that was exactly what you didn't want to happen in the first test match. And yeah, it was just hard to get into. I watched it out in Gary Owen. We had a day of volunteering out in the club. 50 or 60 volunteers showed up and did jobs around the club. And we broke and watched the game. There was just very little atmosphere. There was very little to get excited about. The first 25, 30 minutes, it was just really apparent how superior the Lions were. They were just a higher quality team. And one thing I thought I wouldn't be saying about a Joe Schmidt coach team was Australia just looked one-dimensional. They didn't look like they had any ideas. They didn't have any of their three set plays. It was kind of picking and going at one stage for an extended period, and it was very unlike what I was expecting from Schmidt. So I'm hoping that there's a bit of a change in philosophy or game plan for the coming weekend. I'm hoping that with a bit of physicality and go-forward ball introduced by Valentini and possibly Skelton coming back in, they might get a bit more fun football and those three phase plays might be more of an option. But overall, it was just, it didn't quite whet the appetite for the next two tests.
I'd say Sky Sports were delighted when Ronan O'Gara on commentary was saying, lads, this game has been over for a long time and it just doesn't look like it on the scoreboard.
Yeah, they're great at hyping it up. masters of making things seem life or death when it comes to the sporting arena. But yeah, no better man than Raj to cut through the BS and call it as is. And that was just what it was. The game was long over before the end, of the 8-point margin doesn't reflect the game at all.
Why wasn't it an absolute battering on the scoreline?
Yeah, good question. I think the Lions perhaps became complacent. There's the other side of it where Australia perhaps grew into the game and got a bit more used to each other. I just think the whole affair was a bit flat, and that was kind of inevitable. It's really hard when you have the upper hand and it's been such a big build-up, and it's a Lions tour, and it's every 4 years or every 12 years down in Australia. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for most players. And then to essentially batter them in the first 25, 30 minutes, have such an upper hand, have such an obvious discrepancy in quality, and then it did fall off. The line-out capitulated, which Kelleher obviously won't be happy with, the forwards pack. So they kind of lost their platform and their set plays and their launches, and Australia did grow into it. So that would be something definitely for the Lions to work on. And you would hope it's going to be a closer game come the second half next week.
I was encouraged for 6-7 minutes that we might actually have a real contest here, that McWright, poach, I think it's Furlong who takes the ball into the carry, and it's an Australia turnover close enough to in front of their own posts, and it cuts to Joe Schmidt and he ends up punching his palm, and it's like, yeah, geez, this could be like a classic Joe Schmidt job at the breakdown here, and it just didn't go anywhere from that platform.
No, it didn't, and we spoke about it last week that they had kind of picked a foraging team, a work rate team, as opposed to a fun football or physical team. They had other options that they possibly could have picked, but that's the selection they went with. And yeah, I agree. I thought they looked really up for it, but when you're playing a motivated Tyburn, Curry, it's very hard to get ascendancy at the breakdown, and the two of those players in particular were standouts. They were exceptional. And yeah, the Lions, for all we've spoken about over the last few weeks about not having good return breakdown time, they were really clinical there. They guaranteed fun football on a platter for Gibson Park. And once he got the ball out to Russell, it was just a kind of, it was a field day for him really for most of that first half.
They were exceptional. I do want to get to that in a moment. But just one other thing that I guess was kind of maybe giving the neutral a sense of hope in the first half was just how profligate the Lions were. And I do wonder if there is like a real statement performance or a real comeback performance from Australia this week, if this is actually going to cost the Lions in some way, because just the way that scoreboard didn't reflect it, like there was a period of play that people will remember around half an hour in when you have that Finn Russell kick out wide to Joe McCarthy, and really that should have been bread and butter for Finn Russell. It should have been into the bread basket, and to use two bread related metaphors in one sentence there, for Joe McCarthy to run in. 2 minutes later then you have that James Lowe moment where he just clearly has to pass it out wide and he just decides not to do it, and then 2 minutes after that Mauro Toje goes very high and is held up over the line. Ultimately it doesn't matter because Tom Curry goes over and scores a try for the Lions in the exact same passage of play, but they should have scored three times before they eventually did.
Yeah, that cross kick to Joe McCarthy, I'm reading here throughout the day that he had an issue with plantar fasciitis, and he did look like he was moving not very freely there. So I don't know if it's necessarily a poorly executed kick.
Right.
I think he was, from my naked eye, he looked like he was struggling, and that kind of confirms that maybe he wasn't at full speed. But yeah, definitely they should have finished that. They should have finished the other few opportunities. And it probably bred a bit of life into Australia. Probably got their confidence up on the defensive side of things. But on the flip side of that, I thought the Lions' defence was exceptional, which probably speaks to the fact that Australia could get nothing going in terms of those 3-4 set phase plays that Schmidt is famous for. Like when you think back to how they looked in the autumn test series, not so long ago, they looked really sharp. There was a lot of positivity and momentum. They'd unearthed a few players. Suoli in the middle of the park looked like he was going to be a real standout player. Still could be in this test series, but nothing really suggested that that they can, I don't know. It'll be a serious turnaround when it comes to next weekend if they can put in a really clinical Joe Schmidt-like performance, because the weekend just gone, it was just very, very poor.
And the chances are is that actually the Lions are going to be the team who are more clinical next week rather than the Aussies. Like that's the brutal reality of what we're trying to expect from the series. And the thing that you can't really question about that Lions performance on Saturday was just the motivation. Like you talk about their defence there being exceptional. Even that moment before half time when Tom Curry smashes Lina and Schmidt is furious. Like that's the sort of thing that you'd expect the underdog to be doing, but actually it's the Lions who are bringing that sort of fire to the party here. So that's another concerning aspect of this as well for them.
Yeah, it is. And you really shouldn't see another team at professional level so much more visibly up for a game, particularly when you consider Australia, the situation they find themselves in, competing against other codes. They have this Lions series followed by a World Cup in 2 years' time. They have what everyone would agree is the right man at the helm at the minute to try to get them over this lull in their world ranking and how they're performing on the world stage. So, and it was played in, as Ryle said last week, an incredible stadium, brilliant crowd there, amazing atmosphere. So everything was set for two teams to go hammer and tongs at each other. But it was definitely the Lions that just showed up more motivated and not that's not a throwaway comment. You could visibly see that they were more motivated. They had the bigger moments. They were celebrating the small victories. I know Ben Earls gets slagged quite a lot about celebrating every turnover as if it's a World Cup final victory, but it's those small little things that builds a buzz and atmosphere around a group, and they're certainly doing that to a greater extent than Australia.
You mentioned the Gibson Park and Finn Russell partnership, which we've been raving about for the duration of the tour, really. From a very Ireland-centric standpoint here, the Gibson Park importance really doesn't diminish in any way. There was maybe some suggestion earlier this year that his form was starting to dip. I mean, anybody who's 32, 33 years of age suffers a loss of form, we automatically think, wow, will he rediscover it? I think he's pretty much answered all those questions in the last couple of weeks, and he was outstanding on Saturday.
Yeah, he was. I think if he doesn't play an 8 or a 9, everyone thinks his form is dipping because the standard he set so consistently for 4 years now at this stage, probably a little bit longer for both Leinster and Ireland, has been so high that anything other than a man of the match performance he's called into question. But he was definitely back to himself. He was definitely up around a 9 out of 10 performance at the weekend, zipping the ball away. He's incredibly fast, incredibly strong, which people probably don't talk about a lot. And just his speed of thought is something that's stood out to me over the last 3 years. It's his clarity of what he's doing. Obviously, it takes a team to row in behind him and pick lines and run at holes. But I've just never seen a scrum half to get there so quickly, move the ball, and it's 95% of the time the correct decision, and it's done with such conviction. They're over the gain line and bam, he's into the next moment. So he really is a phenomenal player. And then playing beside a player like Russell, who's in the form he's in, they're a pretty lethal halfback combination.
There are some aspects of his game and you wonder, is he actually getting better at this? Like, his box kicking was unbelievable. There was one very early in the game, the last day, and I'd say if it dropped, it would have been a perfect 1 centimetre away from the touchline. So the Australian player trying to catch the ball was essentially off balance, just trying to keep it in play because it was about to bounce in. And it's just a nightmare situation to be under a Gibson Park box kick.
Yeah, that was my biggest fear in rugby, being caught in the backfield under a box kick. But yeah, for a winger or a fullback, when you're caught in that position, when a 9 is executing that skill, which is an incredibly hard skill to master, you have a big lump of a second row probably trying to charge you down every single ruck. You have to manage the ruck in front of you so no one's feet or hands are in the way, and then you have to execute the kick. And as you say, land it in a kind of 2 by 2 meter square box. And to do that consistently as he's done, it's probably a skill that doesn't get talked about enough that he has. Conor Murray was exceptional at it. I think Casey has a really good kicking game as well, but Gibson Park, to his credit, has everything, every string to his bow. He has the attacking, the passing, the foresight, the speed, the strength, and then he also has a kicking game, which is pretty impressive too.
It becomes a pretty important storyline for Andy Farrell when he's back in the Ireland gig over the next 2 years to ensure that Gibson Park gets to the next World Cup in this sort of form. And I don't know, do you protect him in some sort of way in terms of his minutes over the next 2 seasons? But we're dealing with a conductor who is truly world class. Well, depends on your definition of world class. Definitely the top two in the world when everybody's fit in that position. And if Ireland can get to the next World Cup with a scrum half who is in the top two in the world, they're going to give themselves a hell of a chance of breaking this quarterfinal duck. And it all comes down to this guy, you'd suspect.
Yeah, you're probably right. His importance can't be overstated. I think he's in the right setup, the right country, the right union, that he will be managed as best he possibly can. There is no better rugby-playing country in the world where a top player like him will be managed. I'd love to know his level of the physical contacts he has in game. He's a very good defender. He's a different type of player to Murray. I think Murray was more involved in the frontline defence. Now, that's, again, just to the naked eye. They're different physical makeups of players. Conor was a bigger type of player. He could find himself in that frontline more often. So, yeah, it's kind of managing how he deals with the level of contact he has. I don't think, hopefully, he doesn't have as many bangs and bruises as Conor had throughout his career. So getting into that World Cup fresh and playing at this form you'd hope, you'd pray that would get Ireland through a quarter final at least, if not a tilt at the title.
And you mentioned like Murray there, and you also mentioned Casey. Like the longer Gibson Park is around, the longer Casey ascending to number one gets delayed. However, the longer Gibson Park is around, the more Casey gets to learn for this stage of his career. I know he's probably looking beyond that at this point, but it surely has to rub off.
Yeah, it does. It does, absolutely. Playing and training and being around someone like that in the environment can only help you. Frustrating at the time, and you just want to play, and you think playing you learn more, and you probably do, but there is a process, and when a player like Gibson Park is playing the way he's playing, at times you just have to accept that he's on a certain level, and it motivates you to try get there. And I do think ultimately it will serve Ireland well to have him performing at this level, where we probably haven't seen a scrum half get to. It will bring every scrum half playing in the country on trying to emulate what he's doing.
Always keen to get your take, Mike, on how the scrum is looking. 27 minutes in on Saturday, the Lions concede their first scrum penalty of the whole tour. Were there alarm bells going off at that point, or was it just a bit of an aberration?
No, definitely not alarm bells. Bit of an aberration. I think they've been very, very strong. I think Gange around the park had an exceptional game. He was everywhere at certain stages of that first half. And yeah, I think they're very well coached. They're high caliber players, and I don't think Australia have a scrum to really upset them. I can't see it becoming an area where the Lions don't have ascendancy, if not complete domination. But yeah, look, remains to be seen. A week, as we said last week, is a long time in rugby. And I do still have the 2-3% of hope that Schmidt can come up with something. But yeah, the scrum I can't really see as being a massive in for Australia. It might give them parity. It might give them a platform to attack off. But I can't see them eking out 3, 6, 9 points from penalties. And to your point last week, I don't think you'd feel the same if it was either New Zealand or the Springboks, where the scrum can be a real asset to them, and it can wear a team down. I just don't think traditionally, historically, Australia have ever had that. And I think that will be the case again.
It's Harlem Globetrotter stuff from the front row alone between Gaines, Sheehan and Furlong at times. It's absolutely extraordinary. And like we're judging them probably a little bit more on that, given the scrum seems like a win for them and a dominant position for them to be in. They were throwing the ball around and picking up wide positions, all three of them, throughout their involvement in the game.
Yeah, we're probably more accustomed to seeing Sheehan and Furlong. Obviously, they play in Ireland. We're more familiar with them. But Gange has probably been the standout player in the pack for me throughout the tour. I think he's been brilliant any opportunity he's had. We spoke about his discipline a few weeks ago. He's really curtailed any kind of silly penalties that he might have given away in his early career. No surprise, really. He's captain teams. You can't do that when you're captaining teams. So he's been the captain of a lot of teams that he's played on over the years. He's had a lot of success. And yeah, I think he's probably in the top two loosehead conversation in world rugby at the minute. And he doesn't, like, you can tell he's a big guy, but he's not enormous. But his strength and his power to get through that first contact, to make the right decision, when to offload, when to go to ground and recycle the ball, is something that he's really, really good at. And it gave the Lions a lot of momentum in that first half in particular.
Just one last question I had from last Saturday, just on the Max Jorgensen try, brilliant piece of fielding up against Hugo Keenan there. Felt like just two backs going up against one another in a fair old joust, and he just got the better of Keenan in that instant. Or is there more that Keenan and maybe some of the other defenders could have done to have stopped him running in that try?
Don't ask me about high balls. Actually, I thought on first viewing, I thought he ripped the ball from Keenan
right
after he touched the ground, but I just think it was a fair contest. Both their hands were on it. And unfortunately, Keenan didn't have the momentum to stay on his feet. He was falling to ground. Jorgensen was staying on his feet, and he just took the ball off him. So very unlucky for Keenan. Excellent play from Jorgensen. And it's very rare you see that happening to Keenan. He's so good under the high ball. He's claimed so many in those tight traffic situations that it's strange to see that happening to him. But it was an exceptional kick. It was an exceptional piece of play. I think he'd be pretty harsh to put too much blame on him, but that's the position he's in, and he's there to close them down. So I think overall, Keenan wouldn't have been that positive about his own performance. Not that he was poor, but he didn't have too many involvements. And now you have Kinghorn playing tomorrow, who I think most people would have had him down as their 15th for the Test Series. So it's a big opportunity for him tomorrow, and I'd be a little bit nervous for Keenan coming into the weekend.
Yeah, that's totally fair. The team that they've named tomorrow just kind of underlines how strong this entire squad is. So they're playing a First Nations and Pacifica 15. It's usually Wednesdays that they're playing. So if anybody hasn't been paying full attention, it's 11 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, that they're playing. And certainly when you look at that back row of Morgan, Van der Fleer and Pollock, like that's I'm more excited about that than some of the Test selections, because there's a kind of a necessary boringness and a familiarity that we have with the Test selections that we know at this point, whereas the final midweek game is really sort of barbarian stuff almost, not to do any of these players a disservice. Just I'm really excited to see that particular line.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a big talking point coming into the weekend's game. So the three of those players, given how involved they are in general play, I can see them popping up all over the field, and they have some job to do to try shift the starting back row from last weekend plus the subs. So yeah, you could see them going all out, trying everything. Hopefully they don't try too hard and go off task. They should just keep doing what they've been doing for the last couple of months with their clubs and national teams as well as on tour so far. But yeah, the three of those, it'll be interesting to see who wins the tackle count, the carry count, who hits the most amount of rooks, who gets the most line breaks. You can be sure that someone like Pollock is probably saying that to them and challenging them to see just how good they can be and just how much doubt they can put into the Lions coaches thinking come a selection for the weekend.
You are listening to Mike Sherry, who's on Monday Night Rugby and Off the Ball at Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing. Owen Farrell is captain tomorrow morning. Mike, he's been speaking about some of the social media advice that he's got down through the years, and you definitely get a sense of a man who's trying to prove a point. And you'd almost be surprised at this point, given he's moving back to Saracens, if he wasn't keen to get back involved in Test rugby with England at some point.
Yeah, I can't see him staying away from the international sphere. He's still, is he 33?
33, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I know that's not young, but he broke on at such a young age. I remember we spoke about the documentaries last week, but the 2013 documentary, I remember O'Connell made a comment after they played the Barbarians that he was the youngest player in the squad at the time, I think, that he was directing people around, barking orders. Even at that young age, he was a presence on the field. And I just think his body work, everything he's done, he's too important a character not to have involved in that English setup leading into what will be his last World Cup cycle. So they'll get him back involved. I'd be shocked if they don't. And yeah, very interested to see how he goes tomorrow. He hasn't had much rugby on tour. The little bit he has had, he impressed. I don't think he's going to break into the Test team, barring a few injuries. But I can see him putting in a really good performance, and what will most likely, injury dependent, be his last appearance in a Lions jersey, I'd say he'll be highly, highly motivated.
It's interesting because like this content around an Owen Farrell press conference presumably gets instigated. I'm open to correction on this, but I presumably gets instigated by English journalists or the British press in general, who I guess are fascinated and understandably so about Owen Farrell and his relationship with the English fans, and a lot of the fans maybe turning on him at the last World Cup. Like, with a little bit of distance here, Mike, why do you think Owen Farrell has proved to be a really divisive figure within English rugby?
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because he's given so much to the cause. He's won them so many games. He's their record point scorer. And he's shown up when they've needed him so often. I do think he's had a couple of costly errors over the years. I do think his high tackles have come at poor times. And he may, I don't know offhand, but he may have cost them some high-profile games here and there. But certainly he's a lot more in the credit than he does against him. And I just think that, I don't know, is it the fact that the perception of a bit of nepotism, which is insane to even think about that, but certainly he came through as his father was still playing rugby. he's been on Lions tours where his dad has been the coach as well. So there's a little bit of that. I don't think anyone that's in any way serious about rugby thinks that there's nepotism at play at all. But yeah, it's a strange one. He doesn't fit the mold of kind of, I don't know, leaning into stereotypes here, but the stuff the English fan in Twickenham, does he fit the mold? A hard-nosed Northern player, probably from a rugby league background, a little bit different from a Johnny Wilkinson. So even though they're actually quite similar players, really big hit tacklers, really good place kickers, totemic figures in different type of ways. But yeah, it's very interesting, and I'm surprised that it's persisted throughout his career, because there's no denying his body of work and how important it's been for England.
Yeah, like I think the perception in Ireland is generally Owen Farrell hasn't always been flavour of the month because he's number 10 for England, and that's kind of where it begins and ends. And there's like a bit of a mystification as to, wait, hang on, why do your own not love you? Like, it's very strange. I've only ever interviewed him once, and he's in like an absolute gentleman, and Brian O'Driscoll and anybody who's been on tour with him says that he's a fantastic tourist. It's one of the great mysteries, and like maybe it is that those high tackles that have come in costly moments, but I think on the balance of things, his contribution to the English cause has been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, it has. It probably didn't help him that he followed Wilkinson. I know Wilkinson had a kind of stuttered start to his England career. He had long periods out with injuries, but he essentially took over that baton from Wilkinson. He's consistently competed against George Ford, who is a really neat and tidy out half. Doesn't have the same physicality as Farrell would have, but probably a little bit more dependable around kicking the corners, getting a backline moving. They played a lot together in the 10-12 partnership throughout the years, but yeah, it's a strange one. I think when you look at a similar character in Irish rugby, Johnny Sexton, I think the vast majority would be huge fans of Johnny and what he gave to the cause, but there were some that got annoyed by just how combative he was, and every decision was argued and hands in the air. And there's a little bit of that with Farrell as well. So I think he just rubs people up. Not a lot. I don't think if you were to survey a group of supporters, I think the majority of them would probably be fans of his. But there is a town centre, a village centre where people can go and express their opinions on Twitter, and that can be quite loud at times. And they're the ones that that break through, as opposed to the complimentary ones, unfortunately.
Just two other questions I have for you. First of all, Jamie Osborne is going to be playing alongside Owen Farrell tomorrow in this Lions team. Again, you look through this back line, and it just gets you really excited about seeing these combinations play. So it's going to be Osborne and Farrell in midfield, Van der Merwe and Graham on the wings, and Kinghorn at full back. So it's an all Scottish back three with Osborne and Farrell. Like, this is, I mean, potentially the start of a great Lions career and the end of a great Lions career, and Osborne and Farrell together.
Yeah, what a couple of weeks for him, for Osborne as well. Incredible opportunity. I think a couple of eyebrows were raised when he got called out, because it is such a competitive area across the four different nations. But he's a quality player. I can see him excelling in the game tomorrow. And as you say, he'll set himself up really well for Leinster and Ireland by putting in a good shift here. And who knows what can happen. The week is a long time. A lot of injuries on tour. If he puts in a good display, and there's a couple of injuries, he could find himself playing in a test series against Australia, which he wouldn't have thought a couple of weeks or months ago.
And then lastly, Thomas Clarkson is going to play off the bench. This is another huge moment for him, somebody who's really impressed, certainly in the calendar year so far.
Yeah, again, similar story to Osborne. I think if you said 5 or 6 months ago you'd be on the Lions tour, you wouldn't have believed it, but I think he's done really well in any opportunity he's been given for both Leinster and Ireland. I think it does aggravate fans outside of Ireland, or maybe outside of Leinster, that a player that doesn't consistently start for both Leinster and Ireland is on a Lions tour. But Farrell knows him very well, obviously, as do the other coaches. It speaks to the quality he has, particularly at set piece time. I think he's very, very reliable. And yeah, these are the breaks in rugby. Take your opportunity, and who knows what will happen. But I think credit to him, he's done brilliantly any opportunity he has gotten. He's never let the side down.
Mike Sherry, great to chat to you as always. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Thanks a lot.
In case you missed this morning's Off The Ball breakfast,
we had this.
I was with my father and he's been to loads of Ireland finals involving Cork over the years. It's the most sick he's ever felt. He said that he was kind of disgusted with the performance in the second half. It's everything, like, it's everything you want to say about it, you know. It was an unbelievable battle jab of epic proportions.
And there was also some of this.
You've got the trophy there. Did you sleep with it last night? Were you the one mindless?
No, I have her here, so I do have him.
Just casually throwing the shot there. No bother to you.
Kind of sick. I made him come out of the room there at 5 to 8 this morning. I didn't expect to see him now, but I think he slept for him, so he did. So safe hands.
Catch up now on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off The Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.